taking their place in a long true line of everyday Americans,
helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. This is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach a rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me. You know, I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and we were talking about the role of the judiciary, specifically this idea of case law and the dangers of allowing courts to make law, whether actual law or just their opinions having the force of law. And it turned into a very interesting discussion. As I'm dealing with this, I'm having this conversation via email, I actually came across some very interesting articles of showing how this power that judges have assumed to overrule acts of Congress, overrule the Constitution, overrule acts of the state legislature, has encouraged them to interfere with things, well, that's not their responsibility. So I want to take a look at some of those today. Let's start with a federal judge who issued a temporary injunction against key parts of an Arizona abortion law. Now, the section in question has to deal with the ban on doctors performing abortions if they know the reason is a genetic abnormality that is not a medical emergency, or that, as the law places it, except in a medical emergency, a person who performs an abortion knowing that the abortion is sought solely because of a genetic abnormality of the child is guilty of a Class 6 felony. So it's an interesting question. Does the doctor know that this is being sought because of a genetic abnormality? And let me back up and look at it from two different ways, because I do look at this and say that really is not a well-structured law, at least not to my standpoint, because it's very subjective. It's not, does a child have a genetic abnormality? It's, is it being sought because of that abnormality? And this gets into this whole question of abortion. But what I want to focus on is the judge coming in and saying, listen, he doesn't like it the way of course, I couldn't find the actual opinion. What I found more was the reporting from both Reuters and AP, as well as Epoch Times. And he talks much more about, you know, that's a bad law. He didn't say it was unconstitutional. He didn't say it violated some U.S. law that was, that fell under our power in the United States. He simply said it was a badly structured law. Because that's not his job. This judge, the purpose of a judge is not to look at a law and say, is it good or is it bad? He's to look at the case in front of him that says, does this law violate, in this case, the Constitution of the United States, since we're dealing with a federal judge? And I didn't see him point to that. Now, I agree that probably that law could be worded better and all that, but here we have a duly enacted law of the state of Arizona that was passed by the houses, elected by the citizens of Arizona. And you have a federal judge stepping in and saying, no, you can't do that because, what, I think the law isn't worded properly? Because I think it might interfere with the doctor-patient relationship? See, that's not a power delegated to the judicial branch. Their job is to look at the facts of the case, look at the applicable law, and determine, is this case valid or not? Not whether or not you think it's well-structured or not. This is very important because if you go to the Declaration of Independence and you look at the grievances we had, the 27 grievances specifically laid out in the Declaration of Independence against King George, the very first one was, he has refused his assent to laws the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. So here we have a law of Arizona that the people, through their representative, says it's most wholesome and necessary for the public good. We as a people do not want children killed simply because of a genetic issue. Unless that genetic issue causes a medical emergency or some other problem, in general, we don't want them. It is wholesome. It is for the public good that we do not kill children because of a genetic problem. And we have a judge saying, nope, I refuse to assent to that law. I'm going to stop it. See, that's not the act of a judge. That's the act of a king. And while, like I said, I might agree that the way this is worded, and again, I haven't been through the whole law and see what standards are met and how they're set. This doesn't sound like a really well-structured law because it's very subjective. But that's not the role of a judge to determine whether or not a law is subjective or not, or meets a specific criteria. It's whether or not it falls within the superior laws of the land. And since this is a federal judge, the only question is, okay, which part of the Constitution of the United States was violated by doing this? So that just means that if a patient really wants to get an abortion because of the genetic abnormality, all they have to do is not disclose their reasoning to the doctor. Okay. And where in the Constitution is that a problem? Now, oh yes, it will interfere with that. But then that's not the job of the judge. If the judge is worried about the doctor-patient relationship, he should become a legislator, not a judge. But this is what happens when we have the opinion of a judge now effectively becoming law, because he stepped in and said, you cannot enforce this legally created legislation, this legally created law, this properly put together law, not because he found something in the Constitution that in the United States says that it violates. No, because he doesn't like the way it's worded. He thinks it's vague, or more accurately, that he thinks it's going to interfere with the doctor-patient relationship. Again, that's not his job. But this is what happens when we turn judges into rulers. Now, it's interesting because this works sometimes in a way some of us may like, in a way some of us may not like. For example, shortly before the New York City vaccine mandate for teachers in school and other staff in schools was to take effect, a federal appeals judge put an injunction on it, blocked it from moving forward. Now, I look at this and say, I could not find the order. I could not find the reasoning behind this. So I don't know what specific standard it was used by the Second U.S. Court of Appeal, Circuit Court, to determine to issue this temporary restraining order, this temporary injunction. But I know that these vaccine mandates are unconstitutional because they deprive the teachers and the other workers of the liberty to live their lives as they wish, of control of the property they have in their body without due process. Meaning the government has not gone through a process that says, you know what, you are likely a danger to others, therefore we are going to have you do this. They can't even show that studies that show the vaccine is all that effective in preventing the spread of COVID. There is some evidence that it does minimize the impact on a person. But again, that's a personal choice. If I wish to take the risk of having COVID versus the vaccine, that's my responsibility. I am not impacting anyone else because all the tests that I've seen the actual controlled studies, not simply the statements of supposed professionals, but the actual studies show that the ability to transmit the virus, the ability to spread the virus between a vaccinated person and an unvaccinated person is statistically the same. There's the same virus load in the nasal passages. So this is, you know, so I look at this and say, okay, but here's the part that always that always gives me some concern. See, we have a law that we have a, actually we have a regulation, as I understand it. It wasn't, I don't think it was actually a law. I think it was a regulation put in place by the mayor of the city of New York. And we simply have federal judges stepping in. Again, like I said, it is a violation of the Fifth and 14th Amendments. But why did we make it a federal issue? Why did the state of New York not step in and say, wait a second, you are infringing on the rights of these people. Stop it. Why? See, my concern in this case isn't so much, you know, and again, I don't know the details. So I'm take this with a grain of salt. I don't know the reasoning behind this, the opinion of the Second U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals to issue this order, other than they think that the vaccine mandate will not hold up once they actually hear all the facts in the case. Now, the Department of Education spokesman does believe it'll hold up, and it'll be curious because, let's face it, we're dealing with a court, and courts are notorious for placing their opinion above the actual Constitution, above the actual language of both Constitution and law. So at this point, you know, it's still a coin flip. But America is supposed to be a republic. That means you and I and all the citizens of this country, we elect people to represent us, to exercise our sovereign power in our name in these legislative bodies. And they're being overruled by judges. In most cases, unelected. In this case, we're dealing with the federal judges. So we're talking about unelected judges. And judges that our elected representatives have done little, if anything, over the last few decades to actually hold them accountable when their behavior is not the good behavior required by Article 3 of the Constitution. So this, again, it's a dangerous situation when the laws only matter if they are approved by the judges. That's not a republic. That's an oligarchy. That means if you happen to get in a job as a judge, you not only can effectively make law, you can effectively just overrule law, you can use your opinion to be a law all unto yourself. And that scares me. Because that leads us down the road of tyranny and despotism that our framers warned us about, that our framers fought against. You know, when, I don't know about you, when I was in school, when I was told, why did we declare independence in 1776? The only thing I was told was taxation without representation. It was drilled into our heads, taxation without representation. And it is in there. If you look at those 27 grievances, taxation without representation is in there. It's number 17 out of 27. If my memory serves, there's about 10 reasons that deal with the judiciary and the power the judiciary has or had over the colonists. There's much more to be feared by an out-of-control judiciary than by taxation without representation. And that is what led us to declare independence. And there's another example. This is a little different. This is so follow me with this. A group of officers filed a lawsuit against the city of Denver, claiming they did not have the authority to impose the mandates that Mayor Michael Hancock's local disaster emergency allowed. Basically, these were put in effect at the start of the pandemic. This is according to the Associated Press. Now, the suit noted that the governor had ended the statewide emergency order in July, but apparently the mayor had continued it. They also argued that the city should have to follow the same process the state has to when imposing regulations. Now, I'm not sure which court this judge is, but a judge, Shelley Gilman, ruled. Well, first of all, according to the report, ruled. She didn't rule. She offered an opinion. She actually didn't even do that. She simply stated that the officers would not allow the suit to proceed. Why? Why did she shoot down? Why did she deny them their petition for a redress of grievance? Why did she simply throw out the lawsuit? Which says they didn't follow the correct procedure. See, they sued the city when what they should have done is appealed the mandate to the health board. Now recognize, Article 2, Section 24 of the Colorado Constitution says the people have the right to peaceably assemble for the common good and to apply to those invested with the powers of government for redress of grievance by petition or remonstrance. This is the Colorado version of the right to petition your government for redress of grievance we find in the U.S. Constitution. So they have a right to petition. But what good is that right if they say, well, you didn't follow the processes we want you to? Now, notice, they sued the city for violating their rights, for violating the rules, for violating the Constitution and laws of Colorado. But this just says, no, what you should have done is taken the mandate and gone to the health department. Health department. Now, that health department works for the very same mayor that is instituting these rules that they're suing about. See, here we have a judge in looking at a case and denying to even hear the case, basically denying these officers their right to petition. They have a grievance against the city of Denver. Why will this judge not hear that case? Now, she may think it, she may find the information for it or against it. She wouldn't even hear the case because she wants the officers to go to the exact same executive branch that's infringing on their rights and say, please, pretty may I, would you protect my rights, please? This is another example. Again, we're dealing with judges acting as rulers. And that is a very, very dangerous situation to be in. When the founders, when the framers of our Constitution looked at history, looked at the different forms of government, and they were looking as to how they wanted to structure our government, they were very adamant that power must be separated. It was dangerous for all the powers of government, or even most of the powers of government, to reside in a single individual or a single group, which is why we have three branches of government. The legislature makes the laws, the executive branch executes the laws, the judicial branch looks at controversies about the law and offers an opinion. But what happens when that judicial branch does more than offer an opinion? What happens when that judicial branch assumes to itself the powers to determine whether or not a controversy can be heard? Whether or not a grievance should be heard? What happens when the judicial branch, rather than offering opinion, simply says, no, we must allow or disallow all laws? See, the power to simply disallow a law is the power to rule. It's that power described in the Declaration that they can simply refuse their assent to laws that they don't like. It's important to recognize in the Declaration and what we're talking about here, it's not a judge that looks at a case and looks at a controversy and I think comes up to a bad opinion. There's certainly plenty of that. What we're dealing with in these cases are judges disallowing laws, or at least suspending laws, or suspending a person's right to petition for redress of grievance because they don't like the way it went about. Now, sometimes that will work in our favor. I believe the New York City vaccine mandate, I believe all vaccine mandates regarding COVID are unconstitutional. The only examples of legal and constitutional vaccine mandates I am aware of involved a probable cause that an individual was dangerous to society. All other vaccines, you know, and again, I'm talking about government vaccine mandates. I'm not talking about private vaccine mandates. I'm talking about government vaccine mandates. There has to be probable cause of the need and the danger, which just doesn't exist with COVID-19. I know we've been told it over and over again, but the facts, the data, the actual scientific studies don't show that. It shows it's a disease. It is much more dangerous to the elderly, the sick, especially those with certain, you know, diseases like diabetes or obesity. But that doesn't make it a general danger to everyone else. The death rate certainly doesn't show it to be a general danger to everyone else. And there is plenty of evidence that there are treatments for this long before this new pill came out. Hydroxychloroquine is shown to be effective in some cases. Ivermectin has been shown to be effective in some cases. I've talked to doctors who say, listen, basic influenza treatments are effective in most cases. But rather than doing that, no, we want to put a untested, unverified drug in everybody's body to deal with a disease that is not that deadly and is, for most people, easily treatable. Does that sound like a probable cause to infringe on people's rights? By the same way, we look at the case in Arizona. You know, the people of Arizona, through their legislature, says, listen, we don't want babies killed simply because they have a genetic abnormality. Now, yeah, there's exceptions. If there's a medical emergency, we're not going to prosecute you. But in general, we don't want babies killed because they have a genetic abnormality. At least solely because they have a genetic abnormality. But you see, that the judge didn't like the way it was worded. So they put an injunction on it until they could hear the entire case. What good are laws if judges are going to simply refuse their assent if they don't like it? Because you don't have to find all the judges. You got to find a judge. That's all you have to do is find a judge that says, nope, I'm going to put a stop to this until I've been satisfied that it's okay. It's not the role of a judge. In fact, it's interesting because if you go back to Federalist Papers number 78, Alexander Hamilton writes, whoever attentively considers the different departments of power must perceive that in a government in which they are separated from each other, the judiciary, from the nature of its functions, will always be the least dangerous to the public rights of the Constitution, because it will be least in a capacity to annoy or injure them. The executive not only dispenses the honors, but holds the sword of the community. The legislature not only commands the purse, but prescribes rules by which the duties and rights of every citizen are to be regulated. The judiciary, on the contrary, has no influence over either the sword or the purse, no direction either of the strength or of the wealth of society, and can take no active resolution whatever. It may truly be said to have neither force nor will, but merely judgment, and must ultimately depend upon the aid of the executive arm for the efficacy of its judgments. Does that hold true for these injunctions as well? Does the federal judge in Arizona and in New York City, are they dependent on the executive branch, the president, to enforce their injunctions? And in the case in Colorado, whatever court, is it that executive that they're dependent on? See, what happens to society if people once again realize that the judiciary has neither force nor will, only judgment? See, it's the judgment of this court that the law in Arizona and New York City should be suspended. It's up to the executive branch to decide to enforce it or not. But you see, they don't realize that. We've all been brainwashed into believing whatever the court says is law, but it's not. At least not according to the Constitution. And not according to Alexander Hamilton, or by the way, the Supreme Court in Marbury versus Madison. In the case of the Colorado, I believe that's a state judge. I'd have to look at Colorado Constitution to see the limits there, but what happens when our laws, when our ability to govern ourselves is regulated by judges? See, to me, that's a dangerous situation to be in. Now, before I head off to break, I want to ask you, are you looking for better sleep, more focus, more energy? Well, one way is to make sure that you're living a healthier lifestyle. And I want you to check out Healthy Cell. They are a leading innovator in the nutritional supplements for health at the cellular level. That's right. Vitamins have pretty much been the same since the 1930s. But Healthy Cell has reinvented the vitamin. No longer a fistful of pills, a gel that you can either take on your own, mix in a drink, mix with food, designed to provide your body what it needs, provide your cells what they need. And as an America Out Loud listener, you can get 20% off your first order. Just head to healthycell.com/outloud. Try one of their products. I've been talking about COVID. So look at the Immune Super Boost, one of the best things. Research doctors have published reports, and I've talked to many of them. They say the best thing you do is have to protect yourself against COVID is to have a healthy immune system. So try the Immune Super Boost or try any of their formulas. And again, go to healthycell.com/outloud and get 20% off that first order.
This is Dr. Peter McCullough. Do you know there's no other condition that I'm aware of where vitamins and supplements make such a big difference than COVID-19? We have an abundance of data that we need to be replete with a variety of micronutrients, and that includes vitamins, minerals, and other substances our bodies need. I rely on Healthy Cell Super Boost. That's Immune Super Boost. It's a gel pack that can be taken every day. I like to do it before I exercise and before I go out. It's a wonderful supplement. It gives me the Immune Super Boost that I need. Go to healthycell.com, use the promotional code OUTLOUD, and get a discount on your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to healthycell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's healthycell.com. HEALTHYCELL, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyday Americans. You've rejoined the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. And most importantly, we teach the rising generation to be free. And that's what I'm kind of talking about today. Understanding the role of the judiciary and understanding the dangers that we have in this current idea that, well, the judiciary rules. It makes us not only a very litigious society, but it opens us up to a lot of infringements on our rights by the whim of courts. Now, the reason I focus on this is I'm asked a lot of questions. I see a lot of comments that show a if not a misunderstanding of the Constitution and rights and the limits of government, but at least a shallow understanding or a surface understanding. And I want to take an example. I found this article. This is actually on American Thinker. And it talks about two different healthcare systems and the situations that are being dealt with. The first is the University of Alabama at Birmingham Health Systems. Now, this hospital, the health system, they are a state healthcare group, and they had a vaccine mandate in place. Now, they paused this vaccine mandate because they were threatened with a lawsuit from the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty. Now, why is this important? See, there in Alabama, a Senate Bill 267 was passed and signed, which prohibits state entities from requiring vaccination or proof of vaccination as a condition of receiving government service or for entering into a government building. So the state of Alabama passed this law, and right now the University of Alabama at Birmingham Health System has paused their vaccine mandate, waiting for federal guidance. This is where the role of the judge is going to become very important. See, the Alabama Center for Law and Liberty threatened a lawsuit, meaning they were going to go to a judge to basically stop this COVID vaccine. The university is waiting until the federal government puts in. So they're waiting for federal guidance, meaning they're waiting for the executive branch to put out rules, which will almost immediately be challenged in federal court. Meaning whether or not your rights will be protected will rest in the hands of a series of judges. Not the law, not the Constitution, judges. The Constitution of the United States is quite clear. The 10th Amendment says a power not delegated to the United States by the Constitution doesn't belong to the United States. That includes employment policy. It also says in the 5th Amendment that you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Yet these vaccine mandates deprive you of your liberty to go about your life without government interference, and your property, the property you have in your body, without due process, without any process that protects the rights of the individual. But you see, whether or not that's going to be enforced really comes down to, well, what a judge says. And if our laws are dependent on judges, we are not a republic. Effectively, we are an oligarchy. Because no matter what the state of Alabama or any state does, or any even the federal Congress does, it doesn't matter unless a judge gives it his or her blessing, or a group of judges. So here we have a situation where the judges will determine whether or not the University of Alabama Birmingham Health System can violate the rights of its employees, potentially of its customers, or not. Now compare that with Houston Medical Hospital. Now Houston Medical Hospital is different because it is not a state entity. Houston Methodist Hospital is a private hospital. Now they have implemented a mandate, specifically a vaccine mandate for their employees. And the employees that were fired actually have filed a case for wrongful termination. Some 117 employees sued Houston Methodist Hospital, claiming that they were terminated for not taking the vaccine. It would be done wrongfully. They refer to this as coercion. Now, what's interesting is this was thrown out by multiple judges. The U.S. District Court Judge Lynn Hughes said, this is not coercion. Methodist is trying to do their business of saving lives without giving them the COVID-19 virus. It is a choice made to keep staff, patients, and their families safer. Well, okay, here's part of the problem. It is coercion. But the question is it lawful coercion or not? If I tell you that you have to do something in order to get a job, that's coercion. If I change the rules of the game mid-employment, that's coercion. Now, what the judge seems to believe that the COVID vaccine will keep staff, patients, and their families safer. But there's no evidence that's been provided that, at least no scientific evidence, nothing, again, based on controlled group randomized testing, not the opinion of some bureaucrat, not the nonsense that's been put out lately as that they refer to as scientific studies. But again, you have the judge deciding, nope, you know, this is not, they didn't say that, well, this didn't violate this law. He says, no, this is not coercion. The judge also claimed that the plaintiffs claim that the COVID-19s, the current COVID-19s are experimental and dangerous, are both false and irrelevant. Well, first of all, they're not false because each and every one of them is under an FDA emergency use authorization. That means they are experimental. And there have been over 12,000 deaths that have been attributed to or correlated with the taking of the vaccine, which does kind of make it dangerous. There have been numerous adverse health consequences, not just death, which would make it dangerous. But you see, the judge doesn't say, listen, there's no proof of that it's dangerous. Wait a second, there is. The judge doesn't appear to provide, hey, here's this study that shows that it's safe. In other words, the judge's sole opinion is, listen, this judge thinks it is safe, it is not experimental, forget the facts. How protected are your rights in that situation? Now, again, this is unique because we're dealing with a private organization. The question is, does a private organization have the authority to determine the conditions under which someone can be employed there? The answer is yes. It's pure and simple. The private entity owns the job. In this case, Houston Methodist Hospital owns those jobs. They hire people. They pay them to do work. Then it's their jobs. Houston Methodist can just set the standards. I may think it's a bad standard. I may think it infringes on the rights. I may think it's a ludicrous standard. But then again, I'm not forced to go to Houston Methodist Hospital, am I? But the fact that we have a judge that simply throws a case out of court, not based on the law, but based on their opinion. There goes your right to petition the government for redress of grievance, huh? This is why I've spent so much time and effort, why I keep focusing on, we need to educate ourselves. We need to understand that, you know what? Private businesses have the right to set the standard for their employees within reason, right? It's not an unlimited power like anything else. There are consequences for every decision. And if you're going to require they take a vaccine, by the way, federal law says they're also on the hook for any adverse reactions to that vaccine. But it also, as a citizen, do we look at it and say, listen, do I want to go to Houston Methodist Hospital? Because they certainly don't have the rights of their employees in mind. If they're looking at this, if it's the position of Houston Methodist Hospital that the vaccine is both safe, effective, and non-experimental, I know that was the opinion of the judge, but if that's also the opinion of the hospital, do you want to go to a hospital that can't read the basic literature that comes with these drugs? I mean, think about it for a second. If they look at this and say, well, no, this is not experimental, when it's issued under emergency use authorization, when it hasn't completed all of its FDA testing, what else are they going to give you that they haven't fully vetted before they give it to you? See, it's our responsibility as people to know our rights and to vet the businesses we do, places we do business with. Now, sure, if you have a heart attack right out in front of Houston Methodist Hospital, I doubt you're going to say, you know what, the fact that they made their employees take a vaccine means I'm not going to go here while I'm dying of a heart attack. That's a decision we have to make, right? There's nothing is completely black and white. Nothing is ever quite that clear cut. But we have to understand this. It's also why we have to look and say, can I find places that will not destroy my rights? There's a reason why the current doctor that I have, the physician assistant I deal with, I know her position on COVID and the treatment that she would give me if I contract COVID. I'm comfortable with that. I vetted that beforehand. I didn't ask the government to do it, and I didn't wait and sit around to see if a judge is going to approve it. I went out and did it for myself. It's the same reason I do business with businesses that tend to protect my rights rather than those that tend to infringe on my rights, unless I have no other choice. These are decisions we have to make. Because more and more, if we're going to ask the government to protect our rights, what we're really doing is asking judges to protect our rights. And then we're not a republic. We're not ruled by the Constitution. We are not, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land. The supreme law of the land becomes the opinion of those judges. Here's another example. This one coming from my home state of Tennessee. See, now, in Tennessee, Governor Lee issued an executive order that allowed parents to opt out of any school mask mandate. Now, my point here is not the legal constitutional rightness of the executive order. The point is, Governor Lee issued an executive order that said parents could opt out of school mask mandates. In other words, put the control in the hands of the parents. However, a federal judge blocked the implementation of that order. Specifically, he said Knox County, which is out near Knoxville, was to implement a system-wide mask mandate throughout the school system. Now, why did this judge do that? Well, according to the report, he said, quote, it is real and likely Knox County students are being infected right now every day at a rate of 162 students every day, and the threat of harm is therefore immediate. Okay, excuse me, this is Judge Greer. Judge Greer, where is your medical license? Where is your statistical evidence that the masks would slow down the rate of infection? Better yet, where's your legal justification to say that Governor Lee did not have the legal authority to implement this executive order? Because I don't see it. Now, again, I don't have access to the order itself. Maybe it's down there somewhere, but that's not the information that I've found so far. So what we're saying is that you have to have a mask mandate. Why? Well, you see, earlier in September, the school board in Knox County voted against implementing a mask restriction. Now, they were then sued by four families in Knox County. Why? Well, their children have various medical conditions, and they're too young to receive the coronavirus vaccine. Therefore, the group argued that Lee's order that parents be able to opt out did not protect their children from COVID-19 and therefore limited their ability to attend in-person classes. Now, again, here's the interesting thing. These families sued because they believe the masks would help prevent their children from getting COVID. Where's their proof? Where's the evidence? Where is the control group randomized study that shows masks decrease the chance of spreading COVID-19? I don't see it. What about the rights of the vast majority of the students in Knox County? Because these four families, now again, they have various medical conditions. If they think the masks are effective at stopping the spread, have their children wear masks. They're too young to get the vaccine. Okay, I understand that. They have to make a decision of what's best for them. But does that give them the right to infringe on the rights of the children and the parents of every other student in the county? The answer should be no. Because there is no, that I'm aware of, scientifically valid evidence. In other words, randomized control group tested evidence that masks do anything to stop the spread of the coronavirus, the COVID-19 virus. And there is some evidence that the wearing of masks is actually harmful, especially to younger children. But you see, the decision was not made based on the law. It was made based on the emotion. Again, Judge Greer. Knox County students are being infected right now, every day, at a rate of 162 students every day. And the threat of harm is therefore immediate. But is masking them up protecting them? Or does it merely make you feel better? See, everybody says, well, people should feel safe. No, actually, we want people to be safe. We want people to be safe. If there was evidence that wearing masks controlled the spread of the virus, you wouldn't need a mandate. The vast majority of people would simply do it because it's the logical thing to do. Would there be people who wouldn't? Yes. But that's their right. That's called being free. But we're not free when a judge can make an emotional response and say, you must be forced to wear a mask, not because you've been shown by due process to be a danger to others, not to show that doing so will prevent you from harming others, but simply because kids are being infected, again, not dying. He didn't give a death rate. He said infected. Therefore, you must do something to make us feel better. What happened to the rights of the parents? Gone. What happened to the rights of the students? Gone. You have a judge refusing his assent to an executive order. Now, again, I'm going to make, you know, I haven't dealt in that. I have questions about that executive order. I haven't dealt closely enough into the laws to see if the governor's authorized to issue that. But I would say simply the fact that he is protecting the rights of the parents to oversee the medical treatment of their children, to make healthcare decisions for their children, I think he's got some ground to stand on there. But that's not what happens. Now it's overturned by a judge because, well, kids are getting COVID, they're testing positive. How many of them are getting actually sick? How many of them are dying? Do you have any proof that the mask will help? No, we don't worry about that. It's a medical decision. It's simply the opinion of a judge. And that is simply one example. These are happening all across Tennessee. They're happening all across the country. Judges are putting their emotions, are making medical decisions without a license. They are making emotional decisions, not based in law. They are putting their own opinions above the law, including the supreme law of the land. And most people are simply following it. We're not doing anything about it. And every time it happens, America becomes less and less a free country, less and less a republic, less and less with a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. More and more tyrannical, more and more an oligarchy, more and more a government of judges, by judges, to get the judges what they want. And in my last case today, I'm going to loop back to what we started with. This idea of federal judges determining whether or not New York City's public school vaccine mandate could go into effect. And I wanted to close out with this, even though I started with this at the beginning, I wanted to close out with it this way for a reason. One is I wanted to loop back. I want to kind of close the loop on this because as I said, you know, this case has been on again, off again. This case eventually ended up at the Supreme Court. Well, technically, it ended up in the hands of a single justice of the Supreme Court. You see, while a court initially enjoined the New York City from implementing their mask mandate, another court rejected that and is permitting the vaccine mandate to go into effect. This was appealed all the way to the Supreme Court. But ultimately, these appeals go to a single justice. Each justice is responsible for a circuit. And all of those requests, all those injunction requests, go to that individual justice. And in the case of New York City, that was sent to Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She's responsible for all emergency matters originating out of that circuit. And she simply denied the request without comment. She didn't say why. She didn't provide. She simply said, nope, we're not going to do it. We're just going to say no. Meaning the fate of the teachers and staff at New York City Public Schools was left in the hands of a single individual who, without comment expression of reasoning, simply refused to recognize their right to not be deprived of their liberty or their property without due process. How safe are your rights now? They're not. See, we're still legally a republic, but again, more and more, we're an oligarchy. Laws don't matter if a judge can simply say, no, I don't like it, throw it out. Or if judges have the final word on whether or not laws are implemented, whether or not injunctions are held, it turns us into an oligarchy. And this is an oligarchy that's perpetuated by our law schools. See, our law schools don't teach the Constitution. I've asked lawyers for years, when they were in law school, did they study the Constitution or constitutional law? All but one said they studied constitutional law, the opinion of judges about what the Constitution means, often in direct violation of what the Constitution actually says. Where does that leave us? We see there's an important distinction that is also not taught in our schools. You see, they tell us that we're citizens, but they don't tell us what a citizen means. See, if you go back to the Declaration of Independence, we're all familiar with the words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We're familiar with that. But it goes on to say that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. See, when a government entity, any government entity, from the Chief Justice, Supreme Court, the President of the United States, the Congress, all the way down to your local school board, to your local school superintendent, even your school principal, when they exercise a power that is not within our consent, that power is unjust. The Declaration goes on to say that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such a form as they shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. We are not powerless. Now, I'm not saying we should abolish this government. No, no, no. I agree with Abraham Lincoln, who said the people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overturn the Constitution, but to overturn the people who pervert the Constitution. But it is our right. I would say it's our duty to alter this government that has become destructive of its role to protect our rights, to only exercise powers that we have consented to. Now, that's done at many levels. That's done through elections. It's done through interactions with your elected officials, by knowing them, by having them know you, by being engaged, by being involved. But mostly it starts with education. See, it's not enough to simply vote. How do you vet your candidates? It's not enough to talk or write or engage with your elected officials. How do you vet the work that they're doing? Do you treat them as employees or as lords? And how do you vet them? Which is why I want you to check out the Constitution Study. You can go to the website constitutionstudy.com, find articles, audio, video. You can find my book over at the other website, constitutionscholars.com. Read, study, learn. That's the basis. See, if we learn how to vet our candidates, we end up with a better legislature. And when they learn that it is their job to oversee, to punish the bad behavior of the members of the judiciary, then these judges won't have all the power that they currently do. But it's up to us. We can't expect government to go fix itself. We can't expect a political party to do it. We can't expect a candidate to do it. It is up to us. We have to do it. Now, I'm here to help with the education, but ultimately it is up to you to read and study. And then it's up to you to put what you learn into action. Now, if you want to find out more, if you have questions, I love answering questions. Do me a favor, go to constitutionstudy.com/events. Register for one of my live Q&As. Twice a month, I do a live Q&A on Zoom. It's also broadcast on YouTube, soon on Rumble. But you can bring your questions, and I'll bring you some answers. But then it'll be up to you to help educate your friends, your family, and your neighbors, because we don't elect individuals alone. We do it as a community, which is why I believe John Jay said every member of the state ought diligently to read and study the Constitution of his country and teach the rising generation to be free. Let's stop expecting government to teach us to be free. Let's start teaching ourselves. Now, do me a favor. Be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. It's important we do our part, that we share the stories, articles, podcasts, and videos so that we can help secure the blessings of liberty for ourselves and our posterity.
Paid the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.